Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Charity Digital podcast. My name is Nick Wyatt, Growth Marketing Executive here at Charity Digital, and I shall be your host for today's podcast. The charity sector is built on a foundation of trust, and trust is built on consistency. Consistency in taking care of our users, our donors, volunteers, and all our stakeholders. It is our duty as charities to take care of all these people, and by fulfilling this duty, we create that trust. But one slip up, and that trust can be shattered in mere moments after months spent establishing it. To help create this consistency and to make our lives much easier, we look to the support of technology. Tech can make charities more efficient, easier to reach, and crucially, keep that data and our systems secure. Good use of technology only reinforces a charity's commitment to act in its audience's best interests. From marketing and IT teams to frontline staff and customer service, technology can make the difference in strengthening relationships, keeping people secure, and in turn, establishing and maintaining trust. So we have come together today to discuss how digital technology can foster trust between charities and our audiences. And to help us along this journey, I'm joined by Rick Wilhelm, Chief Technology Officer at PIR.org, Alice Roach, our Head of Operations here at Charity Digital, and Chris Hall, Head of Marketing at Charity Digital also. Good afternoon, all. How are we doing today?
Good afternoon. Hello, hello, hello. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Ready to crack into this and establish trust with our audiences.
I feel like I should sing the Jungle Book. Trust in me.
I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah, you did, yeah. So I guess kicking this off is establishing the fact that all of us come from pretty different working backgrounds. So our experiences with building trust are quite different. So I guess all I'll open with is, what is it about you and your individual roles and experience that you've learned about building trust? And what are the different tools charities can use to build this trust?
I come from a SaaS software background. So I've worked in that field for quite a long time, delivering software to the NHS and the Met Police. Have a lot of experience of being the middleman between the clients and us as the supplier. So listening to what the needs are, identifying those needs, and then, you know, committing to building trust with them and building good relationships.
So what builds trust, I guess, in what I do, other than having a fantastic Geordie accent, I'm not quite sure. The key thing to any form of trust from my point of view is transparency. You know, whether that's, you know, what you do with the donation or the data you collect, and everything in between that, to be quite honest. Your charities, as you mentioned in the intro there, and it get a bit of a hard rap at the best of times when it comes to trust, and are quite quickly sought after in the news if it all goes belly up. But the best way, I think, for any organisation to get around that is to be 100% honest about what's going on and what you're doing with people's money. I always refer back to, I always tell a story of Charity Water. So Charity Water were briefly charity here in the UK back in 2020, but they've been around in the States for a long, long time. And they had one of the most transparent donation sort of operational models that I've ever seen. If you're not sure who Charity Water are, Scott Harrison, a very interesting guy who founded them, New York party had turned charity founder, and he was the one who came up with the Facebook birthday fundraiser, if you haven't come across them already. And what they done was they basically provided two ways for you to donate. One was to their overhead, so very transparent about how much money that they were going to keep their lights on and pay their staff and pay for the office buildings and stuff like that. And the other was to pay for the impact work that we're doing, which was building water wells in Africa. And you could see that really clearly on the website. It was there right in front of you. Give to one, give to the other. There was no sort of humming around it. It was either one or the other, and you could see how much money went there. So transparency, I think, is that pinnacle. It's that epicenter of how you really sort of engage trust with any sort of user base or audience. I think when it comes to tech on the other side, I think the best trust building tools in any market as Arsenal is a website, as I've just kind of been referring to. And you can add on to that our email service providers and our social platforms and various other marketing channels that we use as well. So it's taking that transparency that you've created, but adding a bit of authenticity to it from your comms channels as well. That really allows us to do that. So is your website up to date? Is it current? Is it easy to get around and navigate? Do you have that impact page like the Charity Water one I was talking about? Do you have videos about what you're doing with people's money and about how people's money is impacting the end user? Or any other content that kind of shows that donor pound in action? Do you have a donor? Do donors have like a profile page where they can easily see what data you collect on them? You know, can they change it? Can they see what they hold and understand why you hold it? And it's about understanding all of that and being able to really drive that forward. You can go even further and look at the tech that aids that sort of authenticity as well. So anything you add to that is adding layers. And the one that jumps to mind is like, do you have a well-known payment platform, for example, that's known by many? Is it PayPal? Is it secure? Is it easy to use? Does it work seamlessly with the donor journey? Is your CRM secure? You know, when you're carrying all this financial data, are you keeping it secure? Are you keeping people's information safe? And you know, building in trust, building in transparency and authenticity into unique tools and tech that keeps everything safe, I think is what's paramount from my point of view.
Yeah, no, I echo that massively from a marketing perspective. I think transparency is one of the best things that any charity can bring to all of their marketing campaigns. And I think we're given in the modern era so many great tools to really get that across. I mean, social media can be used as purely as a tool for transparency, I think. And I think some of the best charities I've seen use it almost as purely as that, to sort of demonstrate their work, to demonstrate where money is going and such like that, and using sort of other methods for fundraising and such. And I think that's such a great way to use those platforms. Rick, you come from a very different background in this regard, so I reckon you've probably got some great insights in the sort of cybersecurity world of building trust.
Sure. Thanks, Nick. And yeah, so echoing the comments that both Chris and Alice made there. So my background is in both the domain space and also enterprise IT and consultancies. And so the points that Chris was making there were really good and important. I think that one of the things that the charities need to be very cognizant of is that establishing their web presence, making sure that their brand is announced and anchored in their website, in their email, and in their use of the web platforms is very important. Because if charities don't sort of establish their digital footprint, someone else may establish their digital footprint and try to undermine the charity and undermine their trust. And also, it's important that charities do this because surveys have indicated that if the charity establishes a web presence using web tools, branded email, and things like that, it's so much more effective than a charity only using social media platforms to get their message out. So social media has its place, but it's really more of as a complement to your anchor with your digital presence on the web via your website and your email. From a cybersecurity standpoint around that, a lot of times charities, I think, can be very concerned, obviously, about their payment platforms, or they should be very concerned about that, but they also really need to anchor and control and secure their web presence, their email accounts, their administrative accounts at where they have their domain registered. The importance of using two-factor authentication, if their registrar has it available, is really something that's hugely important. And if their registrar doesn't have these kind of advanced tools, you could say that they're even table stakes these days, like two-factor authentication, they should consider moving registrars. You may have to pay a little bit more to get to a better registrar, but there's a saying, penny wise, pound foolish, or something like that. But the spending a little bit more on your web tools to be at a provider that has more security is cheap, when if you have to deal with handling a breach or restoring that trust. I mean, we're talking about trust, and everybody here with an earshot knows that it takes a long time to build and only minutes to shatter. There's, yeah, I'm sure, a number of sayings about that.
Yeah, a long time to build and so easy to break, as I was told so much as a child when I was badly behaved. Bringing back to you, Alice, I guess, are there any sort of tools that you've used in your experience to help build trust with in the customer service world?
Yeah, certainly. Particularly in this role as well, I've implemented probably three key technologies that stand out for our charities, which are our customer base. One being an electronic knowledge base, which is called Guru. Implementing that was really key for making sure that my team were trained and always ensuring they're really knowledgeable. So making sure we're always giving accurate information out, which again, I think giving accurate information out and having happy customers will build trust and build rapport. And always having consistent information, because sometimes, you manage customer service teams or as a consumer, you talk to customer service people and you get told a different thing and you get pushed from sort of pillar to post. So that was important. And also implementing an electronic ticketing system. So, a system to answer our customers, make sure that they're being heard. One that we can tag all of their requests and their queries so that we can feedback on, analyze data trends and ensure that we are understanding the needs of our customers as well. I've had a lot of experience with different technology that can help build trust with our customers.
Just building on your point there as well, Alice, I think King Guru got me thinking about one thing we haven't mentioned yet, and I think an area that often gets overlooked when you talk about trust and charities and things like that, which is actually the staff of the organisation themselves. I mean, you've got to protect them as much as you have your service users and your donors. Guru's not something we implemented to build trust in our processes, for example, and are still implementing it as we go through our own cycle. But to take that into what Rick said as well about cybersecurity, it's about protecting your staff and them being, you carry a lot of data on your own staff, payment information, everything else as well. So it's being able to make sure they're secure and they feel trusted and secure to not only carry out the work, but protected by their organization at the same time.
Yeah, some really strong points there, I think, by everyone all, and different areas as well that everyone really needs to consider. Now, I think we've mentioned really some of the benefits of using this tech and the tools can be used, but I think everyone needs to be careful when implementing new tech that they sort of don't by mistake go down the route of causing some issues by using the wrong technology and such. So I think there's one thing that we need to discuss, which is the idea that can technology undermine trust as well as build it? I'll start with you, Chris, just because you mentioned quite a few different elements of technology, and I reckon there's some downsides to each as well.
Try and remember what I said. So I think when it comes to like marketing and comms and stuff like that, I'm not sure if it's, I mean, there is a technological aspect of it, but if I'm going to focus solely on marketing and comms, is it more the technology that undermines trust or the poor use of the technology that undermines the trust is kind of question I'm going to pose here. And, in the interest of the transparency and authenticity chat that I started at the top of the pod, not having a lot of the previous things I mentioned will definitely hinder that. But kind of in addition to that, while, these not having these things don't necessarily reduce trust, having a poor website experience is a quick fire way to put your users off your organization, to jump into Rick's point as well. Do it before somebody else does it and takes the trust away from you. Do you have a donor journey that welcomes them into your organization, sends them through on their own unique journey to engage with your fundraising? Do you thank them after it? Do you follow up with them a couple of weeks later? All those types of things. Are you being over spammy with emails? Are you asking them things too frequently of things that aren't necessarily related to that user or target audience either? Is it hard to speak to someone at the organization? It sounds very futile in this day and age, but if there's not a contact page or a live chat or anything like that, does that hinder you in terms of building trust and having that authentic connection that you need? And when I think about that a little bit grander, you know, it makes me think more of trust. Like, there's two ways to look of trust, and Nick, you're probably sick of me saying this sort of stuff because I talk about it quite a bit. There's the integrity side of it, you know, which we've kind of covered already. And then there's the vulnerability side of it, where, you know, organizations need to let their guard down. They need to be personable. They need to allow users to really get to know them, to give them that upper hand. That side of the trust is what, you know, Mark has called, we call it emotional connection, and all marketing is emotional connection. So it's mostly about ensuring that you do the right things that help donors and service users feel connected to you and your organization. You know, if they have the good experiences with you, like Rick was saying earlier, if you talk to them, if you thank them, if you include them in your decision making in your day to day, the trust will sort of build quite naturally and organically, which is what you want, really. It doesn't seem forced then.
Yeah, no, the point you made earlier at the beginning that I thought was really good about the using tech, the tech itself versus how you use it, is a really good point, especially in the marketing comms world, because I think you've mentioned about the transparency. And I think sometimes you can almost go overboard with transparency, where you actually move into a world where it's kind of being dishonest by trying to be too honest. And I think I've seen a few examples of this where people go overboard in trying to relay a message about what they're up to and such, and sometimes it comes off almost as fake to try and build a space into your communications. And so yeah, you're right in the sense that some of these platforms are great, but you need to use them correctly. Rick, you touched on a few different platforms and such. Are there any comments you have about those?
So yeah, thanks, Nick. I would echo the points that both Chris and Alice have been making here, and sort of amplify a couple of things as it relates to communications and things like that, especially for charities with their donors. As it relates to trust, one of the things that charities have to realize is that charities are really tempting targets for bad actors, because they do have so much data about their donors. And their donors, of course, obviously have some degree of funds, and they have some degree, these charities have some degree of payment information about the donors, perhaps. And so charities have to be really careful about the personal data that they're having. Obviously, they have some sort of an arrangement with the donors that they have agreed to have this personal data, but still the charities have to be mindful of what sort of personal data they have, protect that data, store it, you know, as far from their internet connection as they can, you know, store it offline, store it in an encrypted fashion. And then also undergo a lot of careful scrutiny about how long they retain that data and how much of that data they retain. When we talk about data, and I talk about data with people a lot, I try to have them think of that data as a little bit of a it's a great asset, but it can be a little bit toxic. And you don't want to really, it's kind of like a dangerous chemical that you use in an experiment. Like, you don't want to keep that stuff around any longer than you need it, because as it sits on the shelf, only kind of bad things can happen to it, right? It's a little bit like storing gasoline in your garage. It's important to have, but you really don't want to be keeping it around unless you really, really need it. So charities need to think carefully about what data they keep, how long they keep it, and why they're keeping it. And so if they just sort of engage in this sort of consistent review process, then they are lessening their risk of what would happen if they do have a data breach. And also they make themselves a less valuable target if something bad does happen.
Yeah, I think you really good points there about data. I think it's one of those things, you're sitting in gold, which is also covered in mercury or something like that. But especially with how GDPR laws work in the modern era, it's so easy to by mistake go out your by accident to sort of break those rules. I know that we ran a podcast many years ago about GDPR, and the comment section underneath some of the marketing was just loads of people talking about the horror stories of their information being leaked. And I think that was just example after example of people explaining directly to me about other charities about how they lost trust with them because it's somewhere along the line their data had been used incorrectly or put somewhere that it shouldn't have been. So it is such an easy way to break that trust. Now, Alice, I know this is probably something that you have a lot of experience in, because you've used lots of different tools, and if they're used incorrectly, they can really cause some problems. Do you have any good examples of that?
I guess for me, with my service delivery head on, and you know, previous experience with account management for software as a service companies, it's definitely hindering people, hindering the user experience. So bad functionality, hindering the buying process. If you've got a transactional website, will just make people want to go elsewhere and buy it elsewhere. That's particularly dangerous if they can buy it elsewhere as well. You should want to be, you know, providing good software, having good tech and good functionality, and listening to your needs, your users' needs and requests is really, really, really important. What your users' needs are probably apply to more users as well, which is really important. I certainly think, and I think Chris already touched on this, but not having enough contact information on a website, that's something that really bothers me as someone experiencing and using a website. The company Hermes, now formerly known as Hermes, now Evry, comes to mind. And they are, yeah, a company that you can get your parcels delivered through. And they are so poor and have such a bad reputation. And there is no way to contact them. So if you don't have a parcel, there is no way to contact them other than to insult them on Twitter and hope that they see it and reply, which is just not really what you want to be doing. But there's no live chat. There's no way of emailing a support. And as someone that heads up customer service and support, it's really poor and it really irks me. There should be accountability and there should be transparency. And that will undermine trust if that's lacking.
Yeah, no, that's the number one thing that definitely undermines trust I have of any organization, is if they're really poor customer service and no way to contact them. It's almost like they're as an organization openly admitting that they can't be trusted. And I find that it's the worst. I've been hit with lots of different things like that. I guess some last points I could probably make on that is that I think one thing I've noticed with a few organizations is sometimes having websites or technology which is slightly out of date, and it makes you feel a little bit uncomfortable when you're looking to donate. But on the flip side of that, and I think it's an interesting point to make here really, is that I've also seen the opposite of that. Organizations who have this overly flashy website, which is so difficult to use, that I feel like I'm always being funneled into a position where I feel so uncomfortable that I don't trust them as an organization. So I think it's always...
Yeah, I think that's the authenticity side of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
For me, because I think it's like a, you know, when we, you think of content, if it's too polished, it's too corporate. And yeah. If you're too corporate as a charity, you're not a charity, if that makes sense. So yeah, I totally agree with you, actually.
Yeah.
So it's not easy to find that balance, actually, when you think about it, is it?
No, it's very difficult, especially because it's so easy to get overexcited by new bits of tech and things that look great, but actually make people feel kind of uncomfortable. I know I've been on websites where it seems to move as you scroll down the page. And actually what I find happens is that I end up leaving that page pretty quickly because it's almost being elusive about what they do and their transparency by being too flashy. So yeah, finding that middle ground is so important.
This is where I think everybody said it in their own way now, that in talking to users is incredibly important in testing things. You know, fail forward, test things with the people who are going to use it the most. You know, I think we often think as organizations we use our websites, but we don't, we operate them. Charities or donors or service users use the website, so they're the ones who need to test it for you. They're the ones who should be telling you what you don't know, and they're the ones who should be pointing you in the right direction when it comes to successful donation journeys, how to get involved with the service as quickly as possible, and all the other fun things that we do.
And that in turn once again builds trust, doesn't it? That back and forth.
It's almost like we planned it.
It's the circle of trust life. Okay. So one thing, moving forward then, how can charities look at this and keep updating their approaches towards building that trust? And do they even need to do that? I'll start with you on this one, Rick.
So obviously, you know, yeah, it is constantly a moving target. We were talking a little bit there about websites, web presences, and things like that. There are some things that are constant, right? So, you know, I talked about earlier about getting a domain name, getting your branded email with your charity's brand and things like that. But then things like your web presence are things that evolve and move with the times. Since, you know, one of the things that's obviously become much different since the pandemic started, that, you know, people have become a lot more comfortable doing a lot more things online. But whether it be donating or attending webinars or things like that, people would now attend a video webinar, whereas previously they hadn't attended any of that. So yeah, things are moving and changing, and it's important for charities to be aware of that. However, there are some things, you know, like trust, that always stay in fashion. And then other things that you need to do constantly to sort of keep up with people and things like that. I think that one of the things we haven't talked about much, but is important to always remain consistent, is training. A charity needs to keep training its staff. Cybersecurity is a constantly moving topic. Here at my current company, we do training, you know, almost literally weekly for people on being aware of cybersecurity threats that are out there ambiently in the world, because the bad actors aren't resting, and they're always trying to come up with new ways to trick us to do the wrong thing or to fail to do the right thing. So I think that charities need to be aware of that there are adversaries out there that are looking to enrich their pocketbooks, and charities are attempting targets. So it's important that charities help train their staff so that they can, because the staff want to do the right thing. And so it's important that we help them do that.
I think that's such a good point, actually, and to get very existential. it's in a world, or certainly in the UK, in a place where there's not a lot of trust at the minute, just generally. I think that training and support of staff is crucial, actually. And that carries through, I think, the donors and service users as well. You know, you have to shine out above everything else as a reputable source of information and support. So yeah, I really love that point. Sorry, I felt like I had to champion the flag for you as well then.
I mean, one thing I would also add on that, not only the element of training, but one thing I try to do, or definitely encourage people to do, is if you're setting out to do something, especially in the marketing space, is to take the time to get the feel for people's perspectives on different things. And what I mean by that is how people use different platforms, what's in the most recent GDPR, what laws are around certain things. So you never sort of go off the mark. What was the trend a year ago could actually come off really poorly today. So I think staying on top of all of those things and sort of training yourself before setting out a new marketing campaign or changing your website or something like that is really important as well. I don't know if you've got any more on that the sort of the marketing perspective on that, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a big point of mine to raise there. And a very short answer, do we need to keep updating our approaches? Yes. I shall build on that though and not just leave it there. As you mentioned, sort of talking to users is incredibly important. I think we've said it numerous amount of times. Involving them in the data gathering process and the decision-making process as well. Just generally showing them due care and attention, you know, treat them like you would a friend, because you're asking them to do a lot at the end of the day, whether it is get involved with one of your services or give you money, which is no small thing. The other point is find other charities who would do it well and learn from them. You know, I highlighted Charity Water in this, who I'd encourage everybody to go out and Google straight away. You know, marketing's one of the only jobs where you actively encourage plagiarism. Everybody's copying each other and just tweaking little things in here, doing little things better. But that's what drives us forward, to be honest, as well. You see something you like, you put your own spin on it and you run with it. And then you learn from it, and that's the biggest thing. So learn, test, iterate, all this data that you collect, all these things that you're trying to do, learn from them, change them, adapt, follow the new trends, both in and outside the sector, and evolve, continuously evolve.
Yeah, no, I think that's evolve in marketing is definitely the key thing really there. Alice, in your world of customer service, I reckon updating these approaches is pretty important, and it's been a big part of your career.
Yeah, definitely. You know, people want to be contacted in different ways now. The rate at which, you know, people would prefer to use live chat rather than pick up the phone. Personally, I'd prefer to pick up the phone and talk to a human. I don't know why, but I just like that. But we have to constantly adapt to the needs of our customer base, and keep it modern and keep it fresh. And, you know, some people are using WhatsApp for their customer service. Some people are using all sorts of different platforms. So it's, yeah, about identifying the needs of your user base as well. I think that with our customer base, you know, we have all sorts of different size charities, some just one person charities, really, really small micro ones. So, yeah, it's been interesting implementing live chat here at Charity Digital, because when I first joined, there was nothing like that. That was kind of a revolutionary idea that hadn't been explored here, but there is an appetite for it. Interestingly, we've had a lot of traction with it. So it just goes to show that we must trial things. We must research, trial, listen to what our users want, and see what the scope is for implementing new technologies.
Right. I think that's all we've got time for today. I think it's, if it hasn't been made very clear to everybody listening, that building trust with your users and everybody, every stakeholder in your organization is incredibly important. As I mentioned in my introduction, the foundation of charity work is making sure that we all believe in one another. But yes, thank you so much to everybody listening. Thank you to all my panel today for joining us today. And yes, we'll see you on the next podcast. Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Thank
you. We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.